Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta condemns those behind the twin blasts in the capital, Nairobi, that left at least 10 people dead and 70 more injured.
Terrorism is not an evil that was born in Kenya. Terrorism is a worldwide phenomenon. Many countries are faced with this particular problem. This is an evil that all of us around the world must be united to ensure that we are able to fight.
Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan cancels a trip to Chibok, where more than 200 schoolgirls were abducted.
The president is not going to Chibok. Our troops are out there combing the forests and all other locations searching for our fellow citizens. International support is also there assisting the process.
Also on the program, we will hear about last-minute campaigns in Malawi for the country's top leadership, plus your letters on some of the stories we covered this week. So don't miss out.
Top story.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta offered his condolences on Friday to the victims of two blasts that hit the capital, Nairobi. The attack left 10 people dead and 70 injured, according to the authorities on Friday evening. This is the latest in a string of frequent terror attacks on the East African nation. For more on the attack, I spoke to DW's James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
The blasts occurred at Nairobi's largest open-air market called Gikomba, and that was close to a post office, a local post office within the proximity of the open-air market. One was probably a grenade thrown into a public vehicle, and then the other one must have been hidden by the people that planted there in one of the bales of clothes that were being sold, and resulting, as you said rightly, in the death of those 10 people. Now, as far as the people responsible for that, we have not been told, but usually what happens is that they are associated with either sympathizers or supporters in Kenya of Somalia's Al-Shabaab militant.
Has there been any official reaction regarding the attacks?
Something very, very interesting is that as it happened, President Kenyatta was addressing a press conference on something else, you know, on a local matter dealing with issues of a payment that was made some years back. It's called a racket called Anglo-Leasing. So as he was speaking, he had to do what we call off-the-cuff sort of comments and talked about the attack or the killings of the people. And this is what the Kenyan leader had to say.
Terrorism is not an evil that was born in Kenya. Terrorism is a worldwide phenomenon. Many countries are faced with this particular problem. We've seen the ongoings in Nigeria, the ongoings in Afghanistan, in India, in Pakistan. We've seen terrorist attacks in London, in New York, in Boston. This is an evil that all of us around the world must be united to ensure that we are able to fight and to remove it from our midst.
Mr. Mugabe, that was Kenya's President Kenyatta's comment on the blast that killed 10 people Friday.
Should we expect another crackdown on Somali Kenyans who live in Nairobi?
First of all, before I answer that, the very latest reports I'm getting now as I speak to you is that they have arrested two people that were chased by members of the public near the open-air market. They were making their way out of the place where the blast occurred, and they were looking for an escape route. Unfortunately, there was a big jam, and they happened to be caught by members of the public and handed to police. And the police have saluted members of the public for once for arresting those two suspects. They are being questioned. Well, to answer your question about more roundup or screening or arrest of Somalis, it's been going on. We don't even have to expect it to happen. It's been going on, and it continues on a daily basis. But they seem to be concentrating not only in one area like Nairobi or Eastleigh, where most of the Somalis are living, but it's on the outskirts of Nairobi, far-flung areas, in the regions. I think they have spread their wings to the extent that they are now going in regions to look for suspected sympathizers of Al-Shabaab.
I was speaking to James Shimanyula in Nairobi. The blasts came the same week the United States and the UK issued renewed warnings about possible terror attacks in Kenya, leading to a bristling response from the country's president, who said such warnings strengthen the will of terrorists. Kenyatta dismissed the travel warnings, saying that terrorism is an international problem and not unique to Kenya. From the port city of Mombasa, where the evacuations of foreign nationals have been taking place, Eric Ponda filed this report.
Britain warned its citizens against all non-essential travel to Kenya's port city of Mombasa and other popular tourist destinations north of the country. The warning comes after increased insurgent attacks carried out by the Somali Islamist groups Al-Shabaab, which claims it is punishing Kenya for sending troops to fight in Somalia. The United States, Australia and France have also asked their citizens to leave the Kenyan coastal region, where Al-Shabaab has been very active lately. On Thursday, a chartered aircraft left for Europe from Mombasa's Moi International Airport with almost 300 tourists on board. The evacuation continued on Friday, where four large buses and a heavy security guard arrived at the Moi International Airport with another batch of 300 tourists departing for Europe. The British travelling agency Thomson's Travelling Company and First Choice is carrying out the evacuation, and tourists are not happy.
Very sad, very sad. We don't feel threatened at all, and I think everybody's overreacting.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Everybody at the hotel says they want to stay for the rest
everybody
of the holiday.
Everybody wants to stay.
Yeah, I feel safe in Kenya, and I'm upset at the government for forcing us to go back home because we've missed out on a holiday. And it's ruining everything, isn't it? All your lives and all the hotel workers and overreacting. A lot of overreaction, we think.
Over 600 Britons have been affected by the change of the official safety ad from Britain. Airline companies have announced they are cancelling flights to Mombasa, Kenya's second largest city, until at least the end of October. The north coast of Mombasa and Diani in the south have also been hit hard by this mass evacuation. At the Moi International Airport, security has been beefed up as foreigners flock in to leave the coastal areas. The airport manager, Kagungo Yatich, said the move will adversely affect the operations in the airport.
We are in consultation with them. They say it's temporary, and we are addressing the issues which have made them pull out. There are two flights, one operated yesterday, and another one will be departing today at 3 o'clock to London Gatwick. And we do expect them to resume during the high season.
Kenya's government has called the new British travel advisory as an unfriendly act that plays to the whims of terrorists. The Mombasa County Commissioner Nelson Marwa said this was unfortunate.
These concerns that insecurity is highest in the county, we should dismiss it forthwith because it's meant to create a negative impact into our economy.
More than 600,000 Kenyans are directly employed in tourism, which provides 12.5% of the country's GDP. Al-Shabaab has carried out many attacks in Mombasa lately, including a grenade attack on two buses close to a bar on a beach north of the coastal city. But none of the attacks appeared to be targeting foreigners.
Eric Ponda reporting from Mombasa.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan cancelled a trip on Friday to Chibok in the northeast, where more than 200 schoolgirls were abducted 3 weeks ago because of security concerns. Instead, he will travel to Paris to take part in a summit on Saturday convened by French President Francois Hollande to discuss the Boko Haram crisis. The leaders of Nigeria's neighbors, Benin, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad, are also scheduled to attend the summit, which will also include representatives from the UK, the United States, and the EU. Earlier, I spoke to Comfort Ero from the International Crisis Group, and she starts by telling us why it was important for Goodluck Jonathan to travel to Chibok.
The fact that the president himself has had to cancel that trip shows you just how profound threat and instability this region represents. It is unfortunate, and symbolically it would have been important as a sign of his sympathy, but one can't overstate the security that he would have been advised by his own team.
A statement said delegates at the meeting will discuss fresh strategies for dealing with the security threat posed by Boko Haram and other terrorist groups in West and Central Africa.
Yes.
What kind of strategies are the delegates likely to come up with?
Well, clearly there has to be coordinated regional and international approach to dealing with Boko Haram and to dealing with other terror networks. One of the concern has been developing a more coherent, a more coordinated regional and international response to deal with a range of issues that are not necessarily new to the region, a range of issues around terrorism, transnational crime, drug trafficking, piracy and kidnapping. This current situation represents in many ways a unique chance to better confront the local security challenges and the spillover effect that that is having on the region.
Wouldn't a regional summit on the Boko Haram be more appropriate rather than having to travel to Paris to discuss an issue of regional dimension?
Oh, no, yes. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to bring this back home to Nigeria, to the region. The conversations have to be held with Cameroon, with Chad, Niger, Mali and Mauritania. There have been conversations in the past, but you're right, that conversation has to be brought back home, has to be brought back to the region, and that conversation must be more systematic and clear in terms of the strategy and the agenda going forward.
Nigeria has come under intense pressure both at home and internationally for its slow pace to address the issue of the abducted girls. In your opinion, do you think it has been judged fairly?
I think the government hasn't necessarily done itself any favours, especially in terms of communicating what it has done in the past and what it plans to do in the future. The government's response has tended to be haphazard. I think there are times when the government hasn't been consistent in terms of how it's tried to deal with the crisis. So you've seen the government pursue a heavy-handed military approach, has been undecided as to whether a dialogue could work, how it could work, and who would lead that process. It sends mixed messages out. Even within a week of this, the abduction of the girls happening, there were different pieces of information from the government as to whether the girls had been abducted, whether some of them had been released or not. So going forward, I think the government has to have a clearer communication line and to stick with that and not to have different voices coming out with different positions from the government.
At the end of the summit in Paris, what should we expect from President Goodluck Jonathan this time round?
Well, I think there should be a clear roadmap, both how Nigeria wants to tackle what is a homegrown problem and deal with the regional spillover, the regional impact, and the role of the international community in supporting whatever strategy he has come up with, both nationally and also working with the region.
I was speaking to Comfort Ero from the ICG, and you're listening to Africa Link straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. When we return after this short interlude, we will head to Senegal.
Human rights.
Now, over the past decade and a half, open hostility towards gays and lesbians has been on the rise in Senegal. But activists from the lesbian, bisexual, gay and transsexual community in Senegal are not going anywhere. On the contrary, they're working to return Senegal to the normality it used to know. Bram Posthumus reports from Dakar.
It's November 2013. In a bar somewhere in Dakar, a group of girls is having a party. Early in the morning, police enter the premises and arrest the girls. They are charged with being lesbians, thrown in jail and later released. The charge was trumped up. Madame Kebe, the chairperson of the gay rights organisation Sourire de Femme, Women's Smiles, followed the story very closely.
A lesbian in prison suffers twice. You have already been condemned even when there is no conviction. And then you are locked up in a separate prison, inside the prison, and you are forbidden to speak with other women because you are considered a bad influence.
Arbitrary arrests, illegal evictions, street harassment. Gays and lesbians in Senegal these days are confronted with open hostility. And it's difficult to say exactly where that comes from.
Au Senegal,
There is no law in Senegal that condemns gays and lesbians. The law punishes what it calls unnatural acts that endanger public morality. This means that there must be someone present who sees others engaged in these acts. But no one can convict me for being a lesbian. This is what many people don't understand. So I find myself persecuted, followed in the streets, and all that because they think we are promoting homosexuality. Nobody is doing that.
A major role in this mounting hostility was played by the country's newspapers. Djadji Diouf is the president of AIDS Senegal, a movement that helps people living with AIDS and advocates for gay rights. He blames sensationalism.
They just want to sell their newspapers and the Senegalese love sensation. But we have invited journalists to come and talk to us, and I can see some change. Sure, there are those who cannot accept us and who think that letting a gay man speak into a microphone is the same as promoting homosexuality. Maybe they have a negative image of gays and lesbians, but when you do your job as a journalist, you have to be professional.
Gay rights activists reject the notion that they are somehow promoting homosexuality. Djadji Diouf again.
There are gays and lesbians who leave school, who sleep rough, who lose their jobs. But these are citizens, and they must be able to live like everyone else and contribute to the development of this country. And that's our struggle. It's about protecting everyone who is a citizen of this country.
Both Diouf and Kébé are hopeful that Senegal will be able to reconnect with its own way of integrating homosexuality in its society. After all, the law that bans unnatural acts is not Senegalese at all. It was introduced by the French in colonial times. Homophobia was imported and continues to be imported from the West. Getting rid of that fear reconnects Senegal with its own traditions and cultural roots.
Bram Posthumus with that report on minority groups in Senegal. Let's now head to Malawi, where the country is bracing itself for the first ever tripartite elections on May 20th. The 7.5 million eligible voters will choose a ward councillor, member of parliament and president to govern them for the next 5 years in accordance to the country's constitution. At the moment, last-minute campaigns have gained momentum, but the official campaigning ends this Sunday at 6 a.m. From Lantaya, George Muhango sent this report.
With 3 days to go before the polls, the political environment is tense. Campaign teams are shouting their messages over loudspeakers from moving vans, but there is little time left. Analysts say that the battle line is among 4 out of the 12 presidential candidates. These are Atubele Muluzi of the United Democratic Front, Peter Mutharika of the Democratic Progressive Party, Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party, and incumbent President Joyce Banda of the People's Party. For Muluzi, job creation, economic recovery, and political accountability are central to his party's policy.
We have declining revenue base now, $150 million of direct assistance in terms of budgetary support has been withheld. Just go to our hospitals. There are no drugs. Civil servants have not been paid. And yet the elite does not want to take responsibility.
The current president, Joyce Banda, has put her emphasis on agriculture. She plans to continue the donor-funded fertilizer subsidy program, which has kept Malawian agriculture going for many years. Her opponents, however, say that the subsidies rely too heavily on foreign aid and a small elite actually benefit from it. Yet, Joyce Banda remains adamant about maintaining the subsidies and hopes to win over Malawian voters.
I'm committed to continue to champion the cause of the rural and urban poor. I'm committed to continue to champion the cause of women and youth. I'm committed to continue to champion the cause of the workers, the business community. And yes, I'm committed to continue to champion the cause of students.
The recovery of Malawi's economy ranks high in the political agendas of the candidates. But for Lewis Chiwalo from the Malawian think tank Economic Empowerment Action Group, the manifestos have run short of actual business policies.
We haven't seen any visionary issues being articulated in these particular parties who are campaigning, gearing to actually get into government. There are quite a number of debates, but there were nothing tangible came out of those people. It looks like these people, they really ignored the most critical component of economic growth. So Obviously, in any government want to see its economy grow.
While the parties are gathering their last supporters, the Malawi Electoral Commission is preparing for next week's elections. They are expecting 7.5 million people to go to the polls.
George Muhango reporting from Blantyre.
USA.
Let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we have been covering on this program. Maxwell Suk has been taking a look at what you have to say and joins me in the studio.
Hi, Isaac. I begin with the kidnapped girls saga in Nigeria. We have been reporting that the Bring Back Our Girls has contributed to global awareness about the kidnapping of Nigerian schoolgirls. But it's also been slammed as a mere online activism that has no effect on the real world. We ask, is foreign assistance the right answer to Islamist terror in Nigeria? The question attracted global attention.
That is interesting. Can you read out parts of this comment?
Dragon wrote, some group of lunatics keeping hostage 200 girls. We cannot stop them. We cannot find them. And we talk about humanity, democracy, and technological achievement. I wonder if it's a demagogy or sarcasm. Victor also wrote, I am sorry, but I expect our Michelle Obama to look dignifying and not making sad faces. Please say something and do something that has diplomatic flaws. You can even create a Facebook page on Bring Back Our Girls and get millions likes. That would not change the Nigerian government situation. Basically, a weak state cannot protect its people. Now to the South Sudan peace deal. That has been attracting a wave of attention from around the globe as well.
We reported that the UN has said the warring sides in South Sudan have likely committed crimes against humanity, including rape and mass killings. The country has been in turmoil amid a power struggle between the president and his ex-deputy.
Emmanuel Joku wrote, I don't believe in the peace signed between Marshall and Kiir. It's just a mockery of the suffering Sudanese civilians. Francis Kojo from Ghana also wrote to us. He said, if one day I miss African Link programs, it's like I have missed my breakfast. Finally, to the story we reported about the HIV prevention bill passed by Ugandan lawmakers.
Is it right to force people to get an HIV test? We reported that an HIV prevention bill passed by Ugandan lawmakers has caused an outcry amongst those fighting for the rights of people living with HIV. The bill calls for mandatory HIV tests for pregnant women. The bill would allow doctors to reveal the HIV status of their patients.
Lindsay said, in the case of pregnancy, they need to disclose the information for the safety of their unborn child. This would allow doctors to give them a C-section and prevent their baby from contracting it during birth. So, in this case, because it involves the baby, yes, give them tests. Over to you, Isaac.
Thank you, Maxwell. You can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW53110 Bonn, Germany. Your say will be back at the same time next week.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And before we leave you so you can enjoy your weekend, here's a reminder of the stories that we've covered in the last 25 minutes. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta condemns those behind the twin blasts that killed 10 people and injured 70 more in the capital Nairobi and offers his condolences to those who lost their loved ones. Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan cancels a trip to Chibok where more than 200 schoolgirls were abducted 3 weeks ago. We've also been hearing about last-minute campaigns in Malawi ahead of the tripartite elections on May the 20th. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. On behalf of the production team with me and the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a splendid weekend.